Tokyo Podcast episode number 16.
みなさん明けましておめでとうございます。ようそこ東京ポッドキャストへ。ホストのアンサニー・ジョーです。今年もどうぞよろしくお願いします。Hey everybody, welcome to New Year's episode of Tokyo Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Joe, and I wanted to wish everyone a Happy New Year. I hope my Japanese in the introduction was okay. I'm trying to speak more Japanese, but I just don't know if it's good or not. It's harder to speak Japanese than it is to speak Thai. I don't know why. I think it's because of that. I'm always worried about making a mistake, not necessarily a grammatical mistake, but more like an etiquette mistake. You know, in Thailand, the language isn't quite as, you know, formal as it is in Japanese. And also, too, is that the Japanese that I know comes from when I used to live in Japan as a child. When I was a child, when I was 6 years old, my family moved to Oita. And we lived in Oita for 3 years. And so almost all the Japanese that I know in my head right now is just what I remember as a child, except for some of the, you know, stuff I'm learning new right now. But most of it is what I remember as a child. And when you're 6 years old, you speak a child's level of Japanese. So I kind of sometimes I'm afraid to say something because I don't know if people will look at me like, well, that's what a child would say. I don't know the adult Japanese, the formal Japanese. So I always get a little bit nervous when I'm speaking it. How do I sound like? It's much easier for me to listen and understand and just say, hai, wakarimasu. Anyways, I am practicing though. I am continuing my Japanese lessons, and I will hope to put some more Nihongo in the podcast in the future. But on today's show, I wanted to quickly talk about my year in 2011. I was reading some blogs today, people wrapping up their year, you know, talking about their life over 2011. And it got me thinking about how different my life is from the start of 2011 to the finish. I started off the year living in Thailand, and I finished the year living in Japan. And I wanted to talk about kind of making a major life change like that. It's funny how when we need to make a major decision, a major change in our life, it's always very difficult, isn't it? It's something that you ask all your friends what to do, or you hum and haw, you think about it, going back and forth. But one thing I've really noticed in my personal experience is that human beings have a remarkable ability to adapt and make extraordinary circumstances the norm. Meaning, you could have some kind of extraordinary situation, something amazing, something remarkable, even something terrible, but over time, you adjust to it. It becomes the norm. So, and for me, moving to an entirely new country is like that. Because, you know, since I sold my business 4 years ago, I've lived in three different countries in the last 4 years. In all three countries I've lived in, I haven't spoken the native language. I don't know anybody in that new country. I haven't had any job prospects or anything like that. I just decided that I wanted to live in this new country. And there were Germany, Thailand, and now Japan. And when I tell that to people, many people are surprised, they're shocked. And I have to be honest, is that when I was living in Canada, the idea of, you know, moving to a totally new country without any security, anything set up, was a little bit scary. And the first time I did it, the first time I moved to Thailand, it was difficult, and it wasn't as easy as I thought it would be. However, I'm really glad I did that, because now the idea of moving to a new city or a new country, starting all over again, doesn't really scare me at all. it actually kind of becomes the norm for me that, I'm going to move to a new country and everything will kind of work itself out once I get there. I'll figure it out once I get there. So that's kind of what my life was like for the last year. I knew I wanted to move to Japan, but I actually didn't really know how I was going to go about doing it. I was trying to get different visas and all that kind of stuff. But then I just made the decision that, 2011 was going to be my last year in Thailand. And I moved to Japan here and made it happen, got things going. And it wasn't easy. A lot of it is difficult. I really hope that anyone who's listening to this, if you're thinking about making some kind of major life change, my suggestion is just do it. Now, I know that sounds a bit cliche and sounds a bit simple, but really, you will surprise yourself at how quickly you can adjust to the new you. The new situation, whatever it is you want to do, that will become the norm. And then you will look back and you'll go, hey, that wasn't as bad. That wasn't so difficult. I should have made this change in decision many, many months ago. So I hope that if I can encourage anyone in the new year that make some huge changes in your life and tell me about it. I mean, I would love to get an email from you saying, hey, I decided to do this. And at the end of the year, let's see how that happened. I know for myself, I've got some pretty large goals set for Japan and my podcast here. My goal in 2011 was to get to Japan and get set up, because I know it was a lot harder to get set up here than it was in Thailand. Thailand, you can do everything within about a week or two, even if you don't speak any Thai at all. If you're Japanese, you can do it within like a couple of days because the company will take care of everything for you. In Japan here, it's taking a little bit longer to get everything a little bit more established. However, I am extremely excited about the opportunities that are starting to come my way. Thanks to hard work and thanks to the podcast and thanks to everyone who's listening. So I'm very excited about 2012. Don't believe those people who are looking at that Mexican calendar saying 2012 is going to be the worst year. It's not. It's going to be the best year. And I believe that anyone who makes that decision can have like a fantastic year and tell everyone about it. Let everyone know. And let's make 2012 the best year ever. I wanted to mention was that I sent out a video last week to everyone who subscribes to the show. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go, if you have an iPod or iPad or iPhone, you can go to the iTunes store and search for Tokyo Podcast and subscribe to the show. And what that means is every time I release a new episode, it will automatically get delivered to your iOS device. So last week, I sent out a video to everyone who subscribed to the show. Now, I wanted to get some feedback about that video. I wasn't sure whether, I know because this is an audio podcast, I wasn't sure how people would feel about me sending a video out. I used to do these videos quite a bit in Thailand, and many people seem to really enjoy them. And so I decided to kind of test what people thought about me sending out a video here. I know that a lot of people listen to the show on your mobile device, more so than in Thailand. So I wasn't sure if sending a large video file, if people would appreciate that or not. But the video was of me and my fiance visiting Takao-san, Mount Takao, about an hour outside of Tokyo. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to just get out of the city. Some people told us that it was a really nice hiking spot a short way away from Tokyo. So we went out there, we took the video camera along and filmed a quick video about it. And I have to say, I really enjoyed visiting Takao-san. Hiking area was really, really nice. It's amazing to be able to get into the wilderness you know, just an hour outside of Tokyo. It's so cool. And there is a ton of good food around there as well. They have, what's that called? I think it's called dango. These round rice balls that they put the sauce on it. That's really, really good. There's a nice little soup place restaurant up at the top. And so if you're visiting Japan and you want to do some hiking, go check out Takao-san, because it's quite easy to get to. And it's a really, really nice hiking spot. But I wanted to, if you did get that video, let me know what you think. Because if people like it, I'd be happy to make more videos. I really do enjoy making videos, so I'd be happy to make more videos. But if people are not too thrilled about having such a large file sent to them, then I will put the videos just on YouTube and not send them to the subscriber list. So if you want to see that video, go to my website at tokyopodcast.com/Mount Takao and send me a message through my website and let me know what you think. If you like the video, if you don't like the video, if you want to see more videos, if you just rather have the videos on YouTube, let me know what you think. You can send me a message at anthony@tokyopodcast.com. Today I'm talking to Miss Ashley Thompson from the website survivinginjapan.com without much Japanese. Her website offers many how-to guides on setting up your new life in Japan. Today we're going to be discussing a very important topic of giving birth in Japan. Hey Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello.
Now your website is, I would say, a gold mine for finding out how to get your life going in Japan. You've got how-to guides on everything from finding deodorant to hydrogen peroxide, tampons, and hair care, even good toothpaste.
Yep.
Tell me, before you moved to Japan, did you realize that you would need a guide to find good deodorant?
Well, I think before I came to Japan, I had mostly heard either from people already in Japan or just in preparing to come here. It's a the common saying, you know, deodorant. You can't find deodorant. You can't find good deodorant. You can't find good toothpaste, or you can't, like, all these different things that you're supposed to bring with you because you can't get it in Japan without having it shipped to you. And so, you know, I, of course, because I was kind of paranoid about it, I brought a bunch with me, bulk packs of deodorant and that kind of thing. I even sent a box of toiletries over before I came, you know. And I feel like once I got here and after I kind of started settling in more and doing more research, I realized I didn't necessarily need everything that I had brought or sent. Of course, there's still things I like to get from the U.S. and whatnot, but I feel like now I've once realizing that you can get a lot of those things here, and unless you're super attached to certain brands or whatever, like, there are options in some cases. And
now, you're originally from America, and what brought you to Japan originally?
Well, like many people, I came on the JET program, and I wasn't really necessarily planning on coming to Japan before that. I was living in Seattle for 5 years, Seattle, Washington, in the U.S., and I'd been there for a while, and I kind of just wanted to go abroad and do something because I felt like I'd kind of reached a point. I'd finished my undergrad work. I'd done a bunch of volunteering and other kinds of interesting work while I was in the U.S., and I just kind of reached a point where I needed to do something different and something outside of my comfort zone. And so I looked into different opportunities abroad, going abroad, and even though I tried pursuing a few different avenues, I applied for JET, and that ended up working out. So,
had you been to Japan before that?
No, I had not been to Japan. I was actually introduced to Japan through, well, my husband now, his family had lived here when he was, well, he was born here and grew up, spent his childhood in Japan. So through his family, I was introduced to Japan, and I'd never really thought about it that much before other than, oh, you know, maybe it would be a cool place to visit someday.
Your husband's, he's American or is he Japanese?
He's American.
He's American? Yeah. Born in Japan?
But born in Japan, yes.
Okay. When you first got here, what were some of the big shock, culture shocks for you?
Culture shocks. Well, of course, you know, there's everything is different. I think one of the biggest things I noticed was just how, when I first arrived in the summer, it was really humid and
really hot.
Yeah, that's not necessarily like Japan specific, but you know, it is one of those things that I wasn't used to.
Well, especially coming from Seattle, right? Because I come from Vancouver as well, and I mean, it barely gets warm there.
I know.
And you come here and you're like, good Lord, this place is an oven.
I know. You know, and everything smells different. Things, everything looks different. And it was just, well, there was that whole, you know, the honeymoon period where everything's amazing and new and exciting. And, but I think one of the biggest things for me was just having to be dependent on others.
Right.
I'm a very independent person,
right,
which is probably, you know, it's a really Western thing too. But I just, for me, it was very difficult to adjust to that, having to rely on other people. I couldn't read everything. I didn't know what was in things. I didn't know how to, you know, if the post office was trying to deliver a package, I didn't know how to set up three delivery. I had to always ask people, and
right.
I think that was one of the biggest things for me.
And that gets very tiring. And then you feel so great when you can do something so simple on your own, you know, like when you can schedule that delivery and it drops it off and you're like, yeah. You're like, wait a minute, that would have taken 5 minutes back home.
I know. Something so simple that we take for granted, you know, our native language.
I think that's why your website is so popular, because your how-to guides, people living back home don't realize how difficult some simple tasks are.
Yeah.
And when you're in a foreign country, you try to look for any way to try to make things easier.
Yeah,
you know, I recently had to do a bank transfer, and I took your how to do a furikomi bank transfer. And what I did was I just took my iPad with your website on it to the bank, and I showed the lady the pictures that you had put on your website, saying, "Can you read this kanji? Did these pictures tell you what I'm trying to do?"
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, she grabs the iPad, she's studying it, and she's asked me like, "Furikomi," and I'm like, "Hi, yes, that's it. Good. Here's somebody. Can you put it in that machine for me? And hopefully you're not putting it into your own account and it's going to my landlord, you know?" Like. But what's really great about the Japanese is they're so willing and wanting to help. You know?
Yeah.
I almost feel bad how much they try to help, and I wish I could kind of help along. I just stand there and say yes over and over again.
Yep. Exactly.
So you came over here on JET program and you taught English for a while. Are you still a teacher right now?
No, I actually had to quit early because I, in only a few months into my second year on JET, I came down with a mysterious illness, and it lasted. I got really dizzy, lightheaded. I couldn't stand for very long or walk around very much. And this lasted for a few months. And I had motion sickness. You know, if I was in the car, if I went on a train or anything like that, I would get really sick. And it took months to get a diagnosis. And we actually didn't get one until we went back to the States for Christmas, which was a trip we'd planned before I had gotten sick. So we'd already bought our tickets and everything, which wasn't a fun trip, let me tell you that.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Because Japan to America is a long flight.
Yeah. I think it was
like 10 hours.
9 or 10 hours. Yeah. So it turned out that I had what they call labyrinthitis, basically like a viral infection in your deep inner ear.
Wow.
And so, you know, it really affects your balance and everything. So my doctor said, you know, this can take weeks to months to heal sometimes. So, and for me, it didn't end up going away until maybe I think I got sick sometime in late October, and then I didn't heal completely until maybe March or April. It was,
wow.
Yeah, and since I wasn't certain when I would feel better, and I couldn't go to work, and I felt really bad because, you know, my school was very accommodating and very helpful, and my teachers were all helpful, and the principal was really great and everything.
What was that experience like going to the hospitals and the doctors and all that? Did you speak Japanese at that point?
Well, a little, but not enough to go to the doctor by myself necessarily. I mean, other than, like, because this is more of a serious thing, so I wasn't just going and being like, I have
a headache.
I feel sick. Like, right. You know, it was more, so my husband had to go with me to most of these appointments since he can speak Japanese. So, and, you know, we went to the hospital. We saw various specialists. We had to see all different kinds of doctors. And in the beginning, they'd all say it was different things. And then, you know, well, you just have a cold, or you just have this or that, or, and then they started just saying, it's just stress. But I knew it wasn't stress because I was actually at a really good point in my life, probably the most relaxed I'd ever been. Like, you know, I just gotten married like earlier that year.
You're in the honeymoon stage. You're not stressed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, things were really good. But as the months went by of getting no diagnosis, and they kept saying the same thing. And then, of course, right. That did make me more stressed out.
You're making me stressed.
I know. well, and just the fact that a lot of doctors here, not all doctors, but a lot of them they don't like it when you question them,
right?
Like, at all.
Right.
So even if I was just like, well, I don't think that's what's going on. Like, can we just try this, or can we like do this, or, you know, just to try to figure out what's going on. But a lot of them weren't very willing to do that. And
What did they do? Did they give you blood tests? Did they do actual checkup, or did they just kind of talk to you and?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I had an MRI done at the hospital.
Okay, so they did the full checkup.
Yeah, I had blood tests done. I had, you know, they checked out my ears and my nose and everything because I have allergies. So I kept thinking, like, is it something with my allergies? Like, is something going on? You know, they checked all of that. They gave me different prescriptions to try, and which didn't work, unfortunately. And then, of course, they didn't like it when I went back and said that they didn't work. Okay. so, yeah, it was really frustrating. It could also just be that maybe it was the doctors around where we live. You know, I didn't go to Tokyo or anything like that for this, just because we couldn't spend the money on it, and I didn't really feel like riding on the train that long.
Right.
Being sick, getting motion sickness. So, yeah, but it basically ended up coming down to nothing was being solved at all. And like, some of the doctors were okay. The neurologist that did the MRI at the hospital, he was really nice. But most of the other doctors that I saw for this weren't necessarily very nice or helpful. I mean, they would try to be helpful, but
in the Japanese style.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
So you came back to Japan, though. Obviously, you got all patched up, mm-hmm. back in good old America, and came back to Japan, and did that previous experience with doctors and whatnot weigh on you when you got pregnant with the thought of giving birth here? Did you kind of think like, maybe we should go back to America to have our baby?
Well, for us, financially, it wasn't really an option to go to the U.S., even if I'd wanted to. You know, we don't have health insurance in the States, which is a big problem. If you don't have insurance, it's kind of difficult to pay for anything. And here, they actually pay you to give birth, essentially. Right. So they'll cover the childbirth. Well, they have like a lump sum that they'll give you. But so, like, I was a bit nervous about it. You know, I did a bunch of research, and I felt better knowing that Japan has one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world, even lower than, or of developed nations in the world, I should say.
Right.
You know, and the U.S. actually has a higher one. So that made me feel better, even knowing that things would be different or maybe I wouldn't necessarily be comfortable with everything, but...
Were you worried about the language at all? Did the doctors speak English?
We actually found a doctor that spoke English. We weren't trying to. My main goal was just trying to find a flexible doctor that would be open to, you know, us asking questions or us, you know, just being like, well, this is how they do things in the U.S. So, like, just not in a, like, condemning way or anything, but just to be like, is this, you know, normal, or is this, like, this is how they do things here? Like, is it, you know, comparing and kind of just... hopefully trying to find someone that would be flexible with what we wanted to do, what I wanted to do, like my birth plan and, just the whole process. So it was a bit difficult trying to find a doctor at first because...
How did you do that? Do you look online?
Well, ironically, we actually live next to an OBGYN.
Oh, really?
But,
hey, neighbor, yeah. How's it going?
I know, but, he's not necessarily that nice. I'm sure some people have okay experiences with him, but every time I've gone to see him, I've always felt like he's kind of laughing at me. Like it's hard to explain, but and he's never very nice or gentle or anything. So I didn't really want to see him. I went online. I found a website that women use, and they review all kinds of things, but one of, you know, they review OBGYNs, and they'll write about where they gave birth and like how that experience was and how they rate the doctor and the clinic. And so I did use that kind of as a reference point just to go figure out who was around us, who was nearby. And we went to a few different places, and some places were already booked up. They actually, once you find out you're pregnant, you have to book the place you want to give birth, reserve the place you want to give birth right away.
Wow, really, eh? That's surprising.
Yeah.
I thought they had a low birth rate here. I was actually kind of surprised reading your website how busy all these clinics were.
I know.
Like, what?
No, I know.
You thought it'd be totally empty. The doctor's just sitting around watching TV. Hey, we got one. Great. Anyone remember how to do this?
No. I guess the number of OBGYNs in Japan is actually quite low compared with some other doctors. I think I remember reading something about that they want to, something about like hospitals maybe are better than like the private clinics. So, or like they get paid more or something. I'm not sure. But so there's not as many OBGYNs and OBGYN clinics as there are necessary to accommodate. Yeah, I know. I thought it was kind of weird because I figured if they had such a low birth rate, it'd be easy to find an OBGYN with open clinics. I was really surprised that so many of them book up. Although it's possible in other parts of the country, you know, that might be the case.
Right. You were in more of a rural part of Japan?
I live in Shizuoka Prefecture, and I'm not in the cities. Well, I mean, I live in a city, but it's not a big city. It's kind of but it's not necessarily rural either. I think it's probably in between, suburban.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a few clinics around us, and there were a couple that were open, but we visited the doctors, and the doctors were pretty nice, but they didn't necessarily have what we wanted in terms of having the baby room in with you, or they had really short visiting hours every day, or they wouldn't let you bring outside food in or things like that. So what I ended up doing was emailing somebody who... She's kind of a specialist in giving birth in Japan, and well, I think specifically Tokyo, but so I emailed her, and she gave me some suggestions kind of in our area, and one of those suggestions was actually the doctor that we ended up going with, who was a bit further from where we live than we wanted originally, but the fact that he was really nice, he was really flexible, he understood. He seemed to have a good understanding of the fact, you know, there are cultural differences, and he also spoke English, which wasn't on our must-have list, but that was also helpful at times. So it ended up working out in the end, finding the doctor. And oh, he also didn't, he never criticized me about my weight gain, which one of the doctors I was seeing. So it was nice to not be able to be criticized for weight gain, because my first doctor, I was gaining a little bit more than the average weight gain in Japan, even though I was still on track for average weight gain in the US.
But that's interesting, though. Is that, that's like some of the cultural differences, right? Because back in America, they'd be like, honey, start eating.
No.
But in Japan, they're like, well, you know, I shouldn't drink too much water because, you know, that water.
Yep. Yeah, it's, I know, it's very different how they do it. And so it was nice to be able to find a doctor who was like, okay, your weight gain's normal. It's normal, you know, and so that was nice. Yeah. Even the dietary guidelines are different in general. Our doctor never really brought it up with us, which was nice. So I didn't have to worry about it, but, just, I wrote a post about it, but just comparing the differences between what they recommend in Japan and what they recommend in the US, and or how here, you know, it's fine to eat sushi and whatnot, but in, I think, most Western countries, they advise against eating raw fish during your pregnancy. And
what was your kind of overall feeling about the care that you got? Because I've kind of heard different stories from people who, who've gotten medical care here in Japan. Even in living in Thailand, I encountered many Japanese who preferred to come to Thailand to have medical treatment done. You know, and when the Japanese themselves are telling you to avoid Japanese hospitals, it's a little worrisome. So, you know, I did another interview with this guy named Unrested, who has a popular YouTube channel, and one of his original doctors told his wife that they could travel, you know, on the plane quite late into her pregnancy. And they went and found another doctor and he said, no, absolutely, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So can you kind of hear some of these horror stories? What was the care like that you received?
With this doctor, I thought, I mean, you know, he was competent. He was professional. I never felt like he was being judgmental, or I never felt like he was getting annoyed if we had extra questions or anything like that, which was nice, because it's not necessarily something that I've encountered a lot. So overall, I think, you know, it was fine. The birth itself wasn't necessarily a wonderful experience, but I think the doctor did handle things in a very professional way. I think he did everything he needed to do to make sure that I was fine, the baby was fine. And
what are your thoughts on that? Because I have no experience in having a baby or anything like that. So reading your post on your website is rather horrific to me. I have the other tab open to vasectomy on Google right now, thinking, but I don't know, like, is your pregnancy normal? Is it, or is it, was it kind of a rough one? Did your friends after go, man, that was horrible. Mine was super easy, or what?
Well, I did a lot of reading before, you know, just to, which I always do. I like to be prepared for things. And it, I felt like everyone has such a different birth experience. Some people have really great ones, some people have really horrible ones, and there's a range in between. So I guess for me, I was kind of nervous about the giving birth aspect. I never really was that nervous about giving birth here in Japan, like the Japan aspect of it. It was more just the birth itself that kind of freaked me out. And I was just hoping that all the horror stories that I'd read were just kind of those either exaggerated or just like random things that like not necessarily common, but yeah, I guess just, you know, I didn't necessarily have a great experience. I don't, it probably could have been much worse. So in that sense, you know,
so considering, you know, you would say that yours was kind of more complicated, how would you rate the care that the nurses and the staff at the hospital gave you?
Well, I think
like kind of during, like before, during, and after.
Right. Well, before, like during the pregnancy, I actually feel like I had a great pregnancy. I don't, I kind of lucked out with that. Maybe that's why my birth was so bad. I think, you know, probably during pregnancy, I thought it was really good. The nurses were really great. And the doctor was, like I said, really professional and I didn't really have issues with anything during the pregnancy. I mean, I didn't really enjoy going to the doctor all the time, right, just because it's kind of like, oh, okay, we have to go to the doctor again. We have to go to the doctor again. And during the birth, there were a few things that annoyed me, but I feel like it's kind of, I know it's just that maybe cultural things that they are just normal here, but things that weren't necessarily what I, like, you know, one of the nurses, during contractions, in the beginning I was doing fine, but as they went on and on over, you know, several hours, and they got worse, and I felt like it was harder to breathe during them. You're supposed to breathe, but I felt like every time a contraction was coming, I couldn't breathe. I felt like if I tried to breathe, it hurt, like I was getting punched in the stomach or something. So it felt better to just, like, exhale, like, just yell or something.
You can say it. You were screaming.
Yeah. No, yeah, towards the end I was. Like, oh, it was so bad.
But they were telling you not to scream, right?
Yeah, they kept telling me not to, which was probably, you know, and maybe that's what they do in the States too. Since I haven't actually given birth there, I can't necessarily say, you know, what's completely different. But they, you know, they kept reminding me not to scream and to breathe, and I was trying to breathe, and my husband was, of course, the whole time trying to remind me to relax. To try to relax, to breathe, even though I felt like it was impossible. But they sometimes, you know, they like tap me on the nose, which would kind of just irritate me.
They tapped you on the nose, really?
Yeah, it's kind of. I think it's a thing that can happen here in general. Like, you know, I've seen teachers do it with like younger students or things like that. Like, it's just, I guess, a way to like remind them, like get their attention. But for me, I just don't really like being touched all that much with, like, just, you know, people tapping me or anything. Right. It just annoys me. So that was a little annoying, but it wasn't, it's not that they were doing a bad job. It's just that they thought they were being helpful. You know, they were doing what they could to be helpful, even though it wasn't necessarily what I would have wanted.
Was there any difficulties for you in communicating with your nurses when your husband wasn't around? Like, did they speak English as well?
One of the nurses spoke a little English. Like, I can understand a lot more than I can actually respond to,
right,
which is my biggest issue. So even though I understand maybe the gist of what people are saying to me, I can't necessarily respond.
You're like the reverse Japanese, because they can understand more English than they can speak.
Yeah.
So you're like the opposite.
Yeah, yeah, basically. So,
but they you say think the staff were helpful and did their best to make it as easy process as they could?
I do feel like they did. There was another instance after the birth, because you have to stay at the clinic for several days, typically, after you give birth in Japan. And there was one nurse that wasn't very helpful at all. And the second night, when I was moved from the recovery room into a regular room and the baby was with me, the baby was really hungry and she kept screaming. And I tried feeding her several times, but this didn't seem to do anything. And, you know, it's like my second night, I'm exhausted. My baby's screaming. My husband's at home because he has to leave in the evening. And the nurse that was on duty that night, she would come into my room and then she'd ask if everything was okay. Am I, you know, I'm holding a baby that's screaming like she's dying or something. And I'm exhausted. So I'm like in tears. And this nurse is like, are you all right? And I'm just like,
do I look okay?
I know. That's what I was thinking. And I just was like, I wish I could say this in English. And I wish you would understand the sarcasm. But you wouldn't. So I can't say anything. Yeah, so, you know, the nurse came over and she, like, puts her finger into the baby's mouth and she's like, oh, I think she's hungry in Japanese. And I'm just like, I know.
But how do you say no shit, Sherlock, in Japanese?
I know. Like, yeah, so, gosh, yeah, that That wasn't the best experience, just because she didn't really help, and she, you know, she went, she left, and the baby was just screaming, screaming. I kept trying to feed her, and nothing was working. I called my husband. It was like 2 a.m. or something, or I'm just like, I want to go home. Please just come take me home. Like, I don't want to do this, you know. And he's like, don't worry, you'll be okay. I'll come in the morning, like first thing in the morning, right when the visiting hours start at 7. And but I was just like, I don't think I'm gonna make it. Like, yeah, that night wasn't great. I finally was able to get the baby to sleep, but that nurse just did not help at all. And
did you think at all that, you know, because sometimes Japanese people are a little bit shy or hesitant to deal with gaijin, deal with foreigners, you know, because they just don't know how to do it. Did you feel at all that some of the nurses kind of were in that position, that they want to do their job, but because you're a foreigner, they're not 100% sure on how to do their job?
I mean, maybe that one nurse felt that way. I do know what you're talking about, because I feel like that does happen quite a bit in general. But I didn't really, because most of the nurses, they've been doing this forever, and they basically just, like the third night, there was a different nurse on duty, and she was completely, it was a complete difference. She came in the room, she'd like just jump on the, she'd take off her shoes, jump on the, or her slippers, jump on the bed. Like, she just helped me figure it out, get the baby eating, like, and stop crying. And like, this nurse was so hands-on, and so just, she didn't like think twice about it. It was a complete difference. So, you know, she didn't, and most of the other nurses, I felt like they were pretty, for the most part, they were fine. That was the most proactive nurse, I think, out of all of them there. But
like, can I adopt you and take you home with me?
I know. Can you help me for the next few
I want to leave the hospital with one baby and one nurse.
Yeah.
How long did you stay in the hospital for?
It actually ended up only being 3 days, which it was originally supposed to be 4 at this clinic, which is pretty short, I think, in general. I think it's usually 5 to 7 days. But
how long do women stay in the hospital in America? Do you know? I always heard it was quite a short period of time.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything more than 2 or 3 days if they don't have a C-section.
Right.
So, no, but I think they felt so bad after that second night. Like, I was going to have my husband, I wanted my husband to go and talk to them and ask them if he could take me early, because I just didn't want to deal with that same night again.
Right.
But it was funny, because I guess they approached him and they said, you know, if you want to stay the night tonight with your wife, that's fine. We'll set up a bed in her room for you.
They're probably scared. They're probably drawing straws. You go deal with the gaijin. No, I don't want to.
Yeah, and they were like, you know, and if you want to take her home, you know, we know you have to work and everything. So if you want to take her home a day early, that's fine. And so it all worked out really well in the end for me. But
one thing I'm sure a lot of new moms are probably curious about is insurance and costs. Now, I won't ask you to get into details, but, you know, in America, if you don't have insurance, you have a baby in a hospital, you're looking at a huge bill.
Yeah.
Here in Japan, they have national health care coverage.
Right.
Did the national health care cover most of the cost of the stay and the birth and all that?
Actually, the national health insurance doesn't cover pregnancy or childbirth at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but what happens is the government helps out with that, obviously, because they want to, you know, encourage people to have babies. So what they do is they give you, there's a lump sum for the birth, just under, well, if it was American dollars, it'd be just under $4,000.
Wow, really? $4,000?
Yeah. So, but the lump sum covered all but 300 of it, essentially.
It's pretty amazing if you consider you stayed in the hospital, what, 4 days?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then for all the appointments leading up to the birth, you basically, it depends on the city and what your city offers. But you know, once you find out you're pregnant, you go register the pregnancy, and then they'll give you your mother and child health handbook that you take with you to every appointment. And then they also give you a coupon book of some kind. Right. It varies by city, I think, what exactly they do, but So you'd basically take the coupon book with you to all your appointments. And for me, or for us, it was, I think we rarely had to pay anything for any of the appointments. I think if we did have to pay anything, it was maybe 1500 yen or something like that. So it was really cheap.
Yeah. 1500 yen is just about $20.
Yeah.
US dollars. So that's pretty good. And so overall, actually not that expensive compared to trying to do it in the US.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah, definitely not expensive to do it here.
Last question then is, if you guys were to get pregnant again, or there's a new mom listening to this, expecting mom, mm-hmm. would you recommend to her that she, you know, give birth here?
If we ever did get pregnant again, I'm not sure if I want to do it again. But you know, if we did, I wouldn't hesitate to do it here. I wouldn't feel bad about doing it here or anything like that. I don't feel like I had a bad experience giving birth in Japan. I think it was more just the birth itself wasn't fantastic for me. But I think it probably would have happened even if that had happened in the U.S. I don't think I'd probably feel exactly the same way. Right. So, I honestly don't think there's any problem with it. I think as long as you find a good caregiver, somebody that you feel comfortable with and that you know will be flexible with what you want to do, I think is the most important thing. Because, you know, if you have a doctor that's not necessarily as flexible or just kind of, it's just going to be, I don't think it would be a very good experience at all. I think it would just make everything horrible and you'd probably go into it feeling really negative and
right. Getting stressed from the doctors telling you you're stressed.
Yeah, basically. So I think as long as you can find a good doctor and that who will be, you know, make sure you know exactly what you want to do, figure out your birth plan, figure out what, you know, whatever you want to have, like, and also know what you're willing to compromise on and what you're not willing to compromise on. That's right. Basically what I did. You know, I kind of had, this is my must have list. This is my would be nice to have list. And
because some things here, you know, are done differently and mm-hmm. you can't push through everything. You know, you can't say like, hey, everything I want done the same in America. You have to kind of be flexible a little bit.
Right.
But you also have to insist sometimes.
Right.
On mm-hmm. what you believe in.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you're the one that has to go through it. So whether, I think no matter what country you're in, like, if you have to go through it, you want to, like, at right. least a little comfortable. Like, you don't, it's not something that you want to do if you're deathly afraid of what's going to happen. Like,
right.
Like, for example, I didn't really have a choice of if I wanted an epidural. There's nothing around here. If I wanted an epidural, I would have had to go to probably a larger city somewhere outside of Shizuoka or something like that. And so, but that for me, at least this time around, I think I probably feel completely different. And again,
the second time you're like, load me up.
No. I think, you know, but that for me before this all happened, I wasn't like, oh, I have to have, I didn't feel like I had to have it.
Right.
It was just, it would be nice if it was an option, but I wasn't like, oh, you know, I really need this. If I did this again, it would probably be on my need to have list. So.
Right. Well, if people want to check out more about your story, I really recommend it. It's quite an interesting read. You're actually a freelance writer. So as horrific as it reads, it's actually quite an interesting read about Ashley's birth, especially that's like you mentioned, the second night when the kid was screaming its head off. I mean, I'm riveted reading this. I'd be like, my God. Check out her website at survivinginjapan.com. And if you are thinking about moving to Japan, I mean, her website has got a fantastic how-to list from everything from bank transfers to, you know, sweat etiquette even. Mm-hmm. So if you're moving to Japan, whether you're giving birth or you're not, definitely look for survivinginjapan.com. And thanks, Ashley. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Ashley for coming on the show. And if you're interested in finding out more about her experience and her life in Japan, visit survivinginjapan.com. And on this show, we were not able to interview her husband, but I would recommend visiting her website and reading the article that her husband wrote about what his experience was like watching his wife give birth in Japan. Many of the procedures and situations are different for the man here in Japan compared to being in America. So it was a really interesting to read his side after you read Ashley's side. So once again, check out survivinginjapan.com, and I'll post a link to her site from my site at tokyopodcast.com. Join me next week when I have a very special guest for the Japanese language series. And if you are Japanese, if you are Nihonjin, and you are studying a language, I think you will really enjoy my guest next week. He goes by the name Uncle Polyglot. Now, what is a polyglot? A polyglot is someone who can learn multiple languages quite easily. And usually polyglots can speak about four or five different languages fluently. Well, the person I'm interviewing next week, he's a Japanese gentleman who lives in Singapore who speaks five languages fluently. He speaks Japanese, English, French, Cantonese, and Mandarin. And what really surprised me about Uncle Polyglot's videos is how accurate and how good his pronunciation is. His English pronunciation is excellent. His French pronunciation is outstanding. I mean, I come from Canada. We studied French in school, and I am just amazed at how good his French pronunciation is. I don't know anything about China, so I don't know if his Chinese pronunciation is good or not, but based on the comments that people are reading, I'm guessing that it's also very good. Now, the reason why I want to have him on the show is kind of tied into what I talked about earlier on the show about making big changes in your life in 2012. And in my experience of teaching English to Japanese people is that the most difficult thing, the hardest thing that the Japanese students have to overcome in the beginning is the thinking that learning English is difficult or hard or impossible. Let's face it, the English level in Japan is not that high, especially for such a modern country with so many language schools here and so much studying. The English level is not that high. And I think there's obviously a number of reasons for that, but I think one of the challenges that Japanese people have when they try to go to learn a new language is that they have this belief that it's going to be difficult. They can't do it. It's that we're Japanese and we don't learn languages easily. Well, this gentleman next week is going to come on the show to tell you that that's not true. He's Japanese and he speaks five languages very easily. And even if you're not studying Japanese, I really enjoy talking to polyglots because I find that the way they study and the way they learn things is usually different than how everyone else does it. And it's a fascinating look into how someone learns something, you know? So join me next week for that. I think it will be a very interesting show. Don't forget to check out my video for my trip to Takao-san at tokyopodcast.com/Mount Takao. Also visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/tokyopodcast. And you can talk to me on Twitter at Tokyo Podcast as well. That's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy New Year, and I'll see you in the next show. Coming into the room too, you know, like daijoubu.
Yeah,
you're just like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, I can almost picture you like that poltergeist girl, you know, like you're in the bed and you're up, the baby's head spinning around and daijoubu.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's what it felt like.
You're like, what the hell is wrong with you?
I know, and I wanted to say something like that, but she wouldn't have understood me, so it was like.